You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello, and welcome to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is World Class Radio. I'm your co-host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me today, it's the Bobby Roode to my James Storm, Mr. Ray Cash. Ray, what's up, man?
See, now look, 2 years from now, welcome to the only 15-star wrestling podcast. You see what's been started?
Yeah.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good, actually, because I told you this morning, I am officially clean and sober for 6 months straight, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Big step, brother. Big step.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I don't even really know what to say. I wasn't really planning on talking about it, but I just wanted to put that out there because that's why I'm going to be super happy today. I got up early and I didn't even realize it, man. I got away from counting days because I found when I was counting days, sometimes it would make me be like, oh, I'm 4 months sober. I could probably, you know, have a beer. Beer was never really a problem for me. You know what I mean? So I had to kind of get away from counting it every day. And in 6 months, I have an app on my phone called Nomo. And it just kind of snuck up on me. It told me I was 6 months sober today. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I was kind of got emotional about it. I was like, oh, thank God. That's really awesome, you know? So anyway.
It's a huge milestone, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it very much. So it's kind of cool in my head that the same week that I hit 6 months clean and sober, which I never thought I'd be able to do, I also took my first wrestling class, which I also never thought I'd be able to do. I thought physical limitations would keep me from ever wrestling, and I thought mental limitations would always, you know, keep me from going back to pain pills and alcohol and stuff like that. So it's really cool. I hit two huge milestones within 48 hours of each other. Just absolutely super cool.
That just goes to show you you're a lot stronger than you thought you were.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. One other thing before we get going. I was telling you about this off air. We've talked about it one other time, but I just recently really got into reading about it and everything that they do. And that is a promotion. I believe they're set in Oklahoma, but I want to say that they've had a couple of shows in North Texas too. Anybody listening to the show that knows a whole bunch about them, feel free to write in and correct me on anything that I am saying wrong. But there is a promotion called WFC, Wrestling for a Cause, and they are putting on a show up in Owosso, Oklahoma, which is north, it's just north of Tulsa, like 10 minutes north of Tulsa. And they donate all proceeds to, and I forgot which, or I didn't read which one, but a children's cancer fund or children's cancer foundation, and it's really cool. It's called the Ryder Herring Cup, and it's named after a young child that passed away due to this awful disease. And it is a 16-man tournament that's put on over 2 days, and it's a really cool concept. I think that's really awesome. All the proceeds going to a children's cancer fund, which I thought was really awesome. Me and you were talking about, you thought it was really cool as well. So I actually asked my wife, we only live about maybe a 50-minute to an hour-long drive away from Tulsa. So I asked my wife for my present for Father's Day, I would like to go to either the Friday show or the Saturday show and sit front row with me and Bradford, and kind of, he gets to watch the show, and our boy Malico is wrestling. Our other friend, ring announcer Mitch McCoy, will be there, so Bradford will get to see all the guys that he's got to see wrestle a couple of times and get to take pictures with them and get their autographs and stuff, and then for us to go up there, and then I get to kind of tell them, you know, hey, all the money that they're making tonight from all of our ticket sales are actually going to a good cause. So I think that's really cool. So I don't know which night I'll go to. But if you're listening to the show and you are at the Ryder Cup and you see me and my son, feel free, come up, talk to us. That'd be really awesome. Would absolutely love to meet some people that listen to the show. Obviously, I'm not saying, you know, like that we're like going to be some center part of the show or something. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, you know, if by some chance, you know, someone that listens to the show is always also at the show, that'd be really sweet. I think we've only had like one person come up and be like, hey man, been listening to the show, and that was randomly in El Dorado, Arkansas, and that was Iceman King Parsons' son-in-law. I thought that was really cool. He came up and was like, hey man, been listening to the show, and I was like, oh, that is so sweet, dude. So I looked him up on Facebook, added him on Facebook, and I thought that was really, really cool. But anyway, so we got some predictions to do, man.
Yeah, a pretty big weekend coming up.
Right, right. Do you think...
Oh, shit, actually, wait a minute. It's not just a pretty big weekend, because I forgot Monday and Tuesday are the UK tournament. It's a pretty big 4 days.
Oh, that is, isn't it?
Yeah, I just was reminded of that, yeah.
How big is that, is the UK tournament?
Well, it depends. Size, well, first and foremost, they're running one of the most prestigious halls in London. The Royal Albert Hall is a very prestigious hall in the lore of British wrestling. So that's one thing, and it looks amazing.
Is that where they had it last year?
No, last year. Well, okay. So they've had two. The original one was in Blackpool.
Oh, okay, okay.
The second one, I don't remember where that was. It was a UK special, and I want to say it was in Manchester. But this one is dead in the heart of London. But this one is big for a number of reasons. Number one, one of the most legendary British wrestlers of all time, Johnny Saint, has been announced as the UK division general manager. So they put a face to the brand now. Number two, there are rumors that Triple H has some announcements to make, one of which I believe is they finally got a show.
Really? So you think that there's going to be a network, yes, a network exclusive show about or involving UK wrestling, kind of like be like the NXT of the UK? Is that what you're picturing? Sweet.
That's exactly what I'm picturing, and I'd expect to hear that a performance center should be on the way by 2020. That's both just assumptions of mine. I have not heard that for definitively, but those are assumptions of mine based on everything Triple H has said.
Go ahead. I got a question for you, but I want to hear what the rest you have to say first.
Oh, sure. I was just going to say the third important thing about it is NXT is doing this with them. So, like, on the first night, it's the tournament that they're having, but they're also having the Undisputed Era versus British Strong Style, which is a match that's been building up for months. On the second night, they're having the semifinals and the final, and of course, you know, the winner faces Pete Dunne. And then on top of that, they're gonna have a North American Championship match with Adam Cole, a Women's Championship match depending on whoever the Women's Champ is after Saturday, Tag Team Championship match depending on who the Tag Champs are after Saturday. And the main event, well, not the main event, but the match that they're selling for day two is Velveteen Dream and EC3 versus Ricochet and Aleister Black. So it's not just UK stuff. They've brought NXT along to kind of make it feel like a bigger thing.
That's really cool, yeah, man.
What's your question?
I can't remember how long ago you told me this, but you told me that the thinking from everything that Triple H has said in the past, that there will be multiple training centers around the world. You remember this conversation that we had?
He calls it global localization.
Yes, that's
that
it.
That is the plan, yes.
Okay, and so with our performance center already in Florida, this mm-hmm. would be the next step in accomplishing his goal, am I right?
Absolutely right. Okay. And it only makes sense that UK would be the first because they already have a strong foothold there.
Right, right. Now, do you remember that documentary about Paige a while back? It might have been a couple of years ago, but it was when Paige first broke into NXT, and it was like following her family around a little bit. Have you ever seen
that? You're talking about the one, the one that wasn't WWE recorded.
It wasn't WWE recorded. And it ends with her going over in one of her first matches in NXT, and her family's watching.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So in that, that's the only documentary I've ever seen that was like British wrestling related. And it really wasn't about British wrestling. It just had like that like 15-minute backstory. And it was actually pretty interesting that like 20-something years ago, for whatever reason, I don't know if there was a specific reason or if it was just ratings or whatever, but suddenly there was no wrestling. There was no British wrestling on TV. And so wrestling kind of went underground, and then in the last few years, and this was before the big British wrestling rush, so it wasn't even covered on the documentary, but I've read articles and stuff about it in the last few years, like because of, is it Trent Seven, Pete Dunne, and Tyler Bate?
And Wolfgang, he hasn't wrestled a lot recently, but those were kind of the four that were kind of propped up, yeah.
And they've kind of been the face of this British wrestling resurgence, am I right?
Sure, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Mark Andrews and Jack Gallagher, but Mark Andrews is with 205. Jack Gallagher is also with 205, so they're part of it, but they're not strictly UK guys like the other four we mentioned have been.
Got you. Is there a reason that Wolfgang has not wrestled a whole lot lately? Injuries, or?
I don't know. That's a very good question, but I really don't know. That's a damn good question. He's healthy.
Yeah,
I know that much.
Cool. We'll have to look that up over the weekend or something to talk about that, because I actually don't know. I've only heard his name. I've heard you say his name once, and I read his name in an article about British wrestling that was really good. And I wish I would have saved it because I could have tweeted it out to the listeners. I cannot remember who wrote it. I can't even remember what website it was on. It was a good while back. But anyway, if you get a chance, I don't remember what that documentary was called. I'll try to look it up. And it was like, This Is My Life or something like that. It wasn't Wrestling With My Family. That was the movie that's going to be about. Or Fighting With My Family. But anyway, it was really cool.
I think the original was called Fighting With My Family, too, which is why they called this one that.
Oh, was it? Okay. And it talks about how her whole family are wrestlers. And the only reason she got into wrestling was her older brother and some friends, I guess, were practicing or training or something. And she got in there. They were trying to get her brother or someone to do something, and they couldn't do it. And she got in there and was like, oh, I can do that. Got in there, did whatever move it was, backhand spring or whatever. And then she, from that day on, she was training with the guys, and now she's one of the more famous wrestlers in the world. Definitely, probably, she was probably the face of British wrestling for a little bit, even for a little bit anyway. Whenever when she gained all that popularity, and then came to NXT, I'm sure there was a lot of people in Britain that got into NXT because of her. You know what I'm saying?
The Knight family is
that her?
Super. Yeah, that's what they call themselves, the Knight family.
Oh, okay.
They're super, super popular in Britain.
Really?
Her mom still wrestles. Her dad still wrestles. He owns a company up there. Her brother is, I wouldn't say a really big-time wrestler, but he's popular.
Yeah.
Out there. So, like you said, it's a family thing. And she was taking her first... She wrestled the first match at 13.
Oh, wow.
In hindsight, we think of her with these neck and back issues. Well, my God, she was bumping before her body was fully developed.
Right,
But, they have a lot of history in that family.
Well, cool, dude. That's really cool to know. I'm going to have the Knight family. I'm going to have to read about them because the only introduction I've had to them is, that Fighting With My Family hour-long documentary that I watched. So I'm going to have to check them out and see what her brother's up to. Because he had, during the show, he had, I think, two WWE tryouts over the course of while they were recording the show. Anyway,
yeah, Zack Zodiac, I believe, is what he calls himself.
Zack Zodiac. Okay, cool.
Oh, I believe that's what it is. I know it's Zack something.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we'll look up some stuff on Wolfgang too sometime this weekend when we're talking. So let's get into TakeOver Chicago, man. Now, was it TakeOver New Orleans whenever we had our first match of Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, right?
It was, but the beauty of this TakeOver Chicago is last year's TakeOver Chicago, the first one, was the match when Ciampa turned on him.
Oh, so it's like come full circle.
Yeah, returning to the scene of the crime.
Ah, that's really cool, man. So why don't we... That is the match that I'm most looking forward to, and you're looking most forward to another match. So let's start off with those two matches. So let's start off with the Chicago Street Fight with Johnny Gargano going up against his former tag team partner, Tommaso Ciampa, which, by the way, is the person that I want to name my next child after. My wife's not digging it.
Tommaso's a hell of a name.
I know, dude. It really. You think she would like it? It's going off of her Italian heritage. She's full-blooded Italian, like we've talked about. And Tommaso, dude, he's the Sicilian psychopath. Why wouldn't you want to name your kid Fox? After that?
Tommaso Fox?
I know, man. You don't think so? You're not feeling it?
You know, hey, look, I'm not having your baby, so it's not really my place to take.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Johnny Gargano went over clean on their last match in really cool fashion. He used...
As the whistle. Yes.
Yeah. He used Tommaso's knee brace that Tommaso originally took off to hit Johnny... Or no, he took it off to hit Johnny with his bare knee is what it was, right?
And, well, he took it off originally because he did the Project Ciampa, the powerbomb lung blower, off the middle rope. And he hurt his knee, so he took it off. But since he took it off, he just ended up using it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Johnny Gargano ends up grabbing it and putting him into this crossface style submission that caused...
Like an STF, yeah.
Like similar to an STF, then Tommaso ended up tapping out. So who do you got first, and how do you think it'll happen?
So I think Tommaso Ciampa wins here, and I think he has to. Yeah. I think he has to win for a number of reasons. First and foremost, Gargano won, like we both said, clean. He tapped. And, you know, if you believe in the WWE rule that whoever is last standing in the last fight before the pay-per-view loses,
right.
Well, Gargano beat the holy hell out of him Wednesday. But the main reason I think he's going to win, and it's two that all play into the same thing, is... This coming up TakeOver Brooklyn, which is essentially that's their WrestleMania. Right?
TakeOver Brooklyn is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least it has been the past 4 years because that was the first big show. This is their last year doing it in Brooklyn.
Really? Do they know where they're moving it to?
Well, you know, it's in the same city as SummerSlam. So SummerSlam is in LA next year.
Okay, gotcha.
So TakeOver Brooklyn during SummerSlam weekend, this is the last year it'll be for probably a while. So I just feel like it's fitting for them to end their feud at that show. So if they're going to do that, Tommaso has to win. But here's why I think they're able to extend everything. This is what I think happens. Candice LeRae going to turn on Johnny and join with Tommaso.
Candice LeRae is going to turn on her husband.
Yes.
Really? That's bold, man. That's bold.
And the reason I say that is, number one, that's straight out of a WWE story. We've seen it before.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you remember, Johnny has been getting more and more and more and more obsessed with Tommaso. Like, to the point where Tommaso's looking like a good guy in some of these situations because he's minding his own damn business. You know, after the match, he beat up Johnny the next night, yes, and he's a heel. That's what they do. After that, Johnny's just been losing his ever-loving mind. So much so to the point where Candice begged him to leave him alone, and he said okay. And then in the same conversation, same promo, he took his neck brace off and said, nah, I can't do it. Tommaso, come on out here. Let's get this done. Tommaso comes out, and that's the night – when Candice was pulling him away from the ring, Tommaso's in the ring, the refs are surrounding the ring, Johnny says, nah, screw that, runs up to the ring, Candice follows him, and Tommaso, as he so eloquently said this past Wednesday, said, he defended himself, punched Johnny off the ropes, and Johnny fell off and elbowed his wife in the back of the head, knocked her out cold.
Ooh, yeah.
We haven't seen Candice since, right? And, of course, now Johnny's blaming Tommaso for that, but there was a clip they showed of Candice showing up to the Performance Center, and Johnny had just got a FedEx, and the FedEx was the contract for the street fight. And she sees it, and she looks at him, and she's like, look, Johnny, I can't deal with this no more. You're on your own. So I think Candice is going to turn on Johnny to join with Tommaso, but I think it's going to be just to get in Tommaso's head so Johnny can ultimately get the win at TakeOver SummerSlam or Brooklyn.
Absolutely. That's really cool, man.
Of course, you can see there's a reason why they'd have to fight again. This dude took his wife, right? Like, you got to catch the fade. You took my wife.
Like, oh yeah, it'll never be over if he steals Candace, or even if Candace comes back to Johnny, you can't, dude. You know what I'm saying? Maybe when she comes back, maybe then you can squash it. But as long as Candace and Johnny are split up, like, dude, you got to get
And I haven't decided if she's going to turn on him because she's really, truly tired of him, and from the storyline perspective, or she's going to turn on him just to get under Tommaso's skin and make him vulnerable so Johnny could finally end it. I don't know yet.
That would be really cool. And then the next match, she turns back on Tommaso, and her and Johnny are in on it the whole time. Or maybe Johnny doesn't even know. Like, he's standing there bewildered, but there would always be that question, if Johnny's not in on it, whenever she leaves Tommaso to go back to Johnny, and Johnny wasn't in on it, or doesn't act like he was in on it, then you always, I feel like the fans, myself included, would always have that question, like, well, does she really love Johnny, or did she just see the writing on the wall, and it was time to jump off this sinking ship known as Ciampa and get back with Johnny?
So many interesting questions, and that this is, you know, I know we just saw what people probably are saying, and what probably is the best wrestling match we've ever seen just last week. But man, and it has a tremendous story, but this story is just as good in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. So we're going to say, you're saying Ciampa, and you want to say that Candice is turning?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it happens.
I think, now I'm going to say, as far as my prediction goes, I do think Tommaso Ciampa is winning. I don't think Candice is turning, but I think Candice turning is probably the coolest way that you end this match, to be honest with you.
I'm just thinking there's got to be a reason why they got to fight again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I really don't know how I want to say that it ends. I think that maybe Tommaso hurts Candice in some way, whether it be accident or not. No, I don't say that. How do I see that ending? Because in my head, I before we got on the air, I'm thinking like, dude, this is going to be another 5-star classic. Ciampa's going to go over, and then they got to have a rubber match. But when you get to thinking about it, like, you know, how does Ciampa win? You know what I mean? So what I'm going to say is Ciampa goes over. Maybe Candice doesn't even come out. Maybe she comes out late or with Johnny and gets hurt one way or another. But anyway, I say Ciampa goes over. Maybe Candice gets hurt. Johnny's checking her out. And Tommaso hits him with the Ciampa Project Ciampa for the 1-2-3. And that sets up a rubber match at the next TakeOver.
Sounds good to me. That's what we all want to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The matches are always going to be fire. That's just who they are. They're amazing in-ring competitors with impeccable chemistry. But the story is such that it'll almost be a shame when it's over.
Yes.
You know, you can say that a lot about a lot of wrestling stories. Normally, most wrestling stories are over. You're like, man, that was great, but I'm ready for the next one. It'll be a shame when this story is done.
Yeah.
Because it's been handled so perfectly.
Yeah, I agree. The story, their last match, with like the 4 minutes worth of pump up video leading into the match and showing the backstory and the year long fight or 9 month fight, you know, after the turn that Ciampa did.
Yeah.
That was probably, like you said, what we've seen over this past week, we've seen probably the greatest match of all time. But I think at TakeOver New Orleans, we've seen the greatest storyline within a match be told. The greatest, you know, does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. That's something I'd have to think about, but I'll tell you this. It does. Normally when people say things like that, I'd be like, come on, man, that's blasphemous.
Right.
I'm really like, you might be right. Like,
you'd have to put it in the top three, right? You'd have to put it in the top three. It's got to be top three, top five.
It is, especially with how many callbacks in the match to little points in the feud.
Right.
You know, like the point at the end of the match where Johnny broke the crutch to stab him, and then he stopped. And then he sat down with him to forgive him one more time. Just like Ciampa did in the Cruiserweight Classic. Or the part at the end of the match where Ciampa's right eye swollen. And he looked up at Johnny, looking just like Johnny's emoji face. Like, the callbacks from every single portion of their feud and their tenure in NXT WWE, it was so masterfully put together.
I agree. Agreed.
It's so masterfully put together, Jordan, that Ciampa got powerbombed off the apron onto the concrete in like minute 8 of like minute 30.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too much.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's the only spot you save for the end of the match. Right now, bro, that was at the beginning. And it was like, it just seamlessly bled in.
Yeah, it was the first third of the match, bro. It was just insane.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it earned every bit of that 5-star rating it got.
Oh yeah, he could have gave that. He could have gave that 5.5. He probably could have gave that 6.
Up 5.5 would have probably been fair.
That's what our boy Rich from One Nation Live, One Nation Radio, gave it.
And
yeah, and he claimed it was the greatest WWE match of all time. And I, from everything I've seen, I would probably say that he's not wrong, because I think it's the greatest. And this is just my opinion, you know what I mean? But yeah, I think it's the greatest story told within a match in wrestling history, out of everything that I've watched.
I still say nothing can ever take... Well, let me not say nothing, because, you know, stuff is changing very rapidly. But nothing has changed. Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21 is still the greatest feat of athleticism, story, match, whatever you want to call it, I've ever seen in my life.
I dig it. I'm going to go back and watch that.
Yeah, nothing will. I don't think anything will ever top that in my mind. And it could be biased because Shawn is my favorite of all time, and Kurt is, honestly, if Kurt has legit claim to say he's the best of all time.
Yeah.
He has legit claim to say, he's not, but he has legit claim to say it. And the story they told and that last 3 minutes of Shawn literally doing everything in his body not to tap, and yeah, just, oh my god, yeah, it's just a beautiful match. And the SummerSlam match might be better, but because it's WrestleMania, you know, it's the first time they got together. It's just tremendous.
I dig it. Yeah. All right, so next, we just did my the match I'm most looking forward to on the NXT show. Now we're going to go to the one that you're most looking forward to, and probably. These two matches are probably 50-50 in the fans' eyes of which one you're looking forward to the most. But that one is Ricochet versus Velveteen Dream.
Oh my god. I don't wanna shout out my girl Athena, aka Ember Moon. I don't wanna do an O face on the on the radio, but oh my god.
Was it's Ricochet's flip dive slash to land on his feet to take what, two steps to say, or take a handful of steps to go up to Velveteen Dream to talk into the microphone, was that the most athletic thing you've ever seen in your life?
I've never seen anything like that ever in my life. Like that, you know, I thought when John Morrison got knocked off the ropes and landed like Spider-Man style on the barricade at the Rumble, I couldn't see anything crazier than that. This motherfucker just seemingly, excuse my language, by the way, but that deserved a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Just seamlessly flipped over the top rope and just walked up to the dude like, yeah, what's up, man? What? It's that might be, yes. And we, like, I know Will Ospreay is, and Ricochet are probably 1A and 1B in terms of that aerial stuff right now. And Neville deserves being a conversation too. But neither one of them are doing that. Ospreay and Neville ain't doing that.
Nah. And, I mean, and yeah, and like you said, nothing taken away from those guys, but I think that's what puts Ricochet just a head length, in front of them.
Oh my god. So look, okay. I wrote a column about this. And the beauty of this story is, the beauty of the story is you have to look into truly deeply into the characters, right? So Velveteen Dream is this flamboyant, over sexualized showman, prince-esque, shrouded in mystery, and he wants the spotlight because when the light's on him, he performs the best and he deserves it, right?
Right.
Look past all that. He is an insecure kid who is still upset he got kicked off Tough Enough. And you can see it in his matches. When he's in a match, I'm gonna use Aleister Black for example. When he was in the match with Aleister and Aleister was just giving him the business, and he slid in and he looked at him like, oh my god, what can I do? You know, he knows he's good enough, but he needs the validation. That's why he feuded with a guy literally just so he would say his name. You know, that was the entire point of the feud. Not I don't like you. Not I'm better than you. You're just going to say my name. He is desperate for validation and recognition. And there is nobody on this roster who is more flashy, who is more, dare I say, talented, and has the resume as King Ricochet does. So there's one thing he said, and I actually have it. That was the quote I put at the top of the column. Have it written down. I'm not going to read it verbatim because I don't remember it specifically. But it essentially says, and this is Dream talking in their preview video for the match. He essentially says that Ricochet likes to call himself King. That's funny to me. And that's funny to me because, I'd rather be the Prince. King was good, but the Prince, he knows there's a bigger crown. That's the most gangster thing I've ever heard somebody say in a promo.
That's pretty sick.
It's so sick, dog. It's and the way he said it, when he has that little lackadaisical, sitting there, it's tremendous. And Ricochet, 15 years in the game, right? Ricochet is one of the best of the Super Juniors. Ricochet is a PWG legend. Ricochet is a Dragon Gate legend. Ricochet has done everything there is to do in wrestling, except WWE. You don't think there's a hint of a chip on his shoulder about taking 15 years to get here?
Right.
They have so much to prove to each other, but they don't realize they need each other to prove it.
Is Ricochet and Tessa Blanchard together? I think they're dating.
Ricochet, because I was about to say, I get them confused. Because Cash is on those with Rachel Ellering. But yes, it is Ricochet and Tessa Blanchard, yes.
And, dude, that is... Think about how talented those damn kids are going to be, bro.
Yeah.
Because she is a phenomenal female wrestler. Yeah, I'm not talking about her beauty, because she's a 10. But she obviously wrestles a different style than Ricochet. But, phenomenal. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I don't know why that just popped in my head. But... yeah, totally, man. Totally. I completely agree.
Tremendous matchup.
Yeah, for sure, man. The way that I hear you talking about it, it almost makes me want to see that more than the Gargano Tommaso Ciampa match, just hearing how Well, because you broke it, down for me more so than, you know, you brought up more elements than I thought about, like the talking about the difference in the way the king and the prince sees the crown. Like, I haven't seen that promo from Velveteen, so that just made it even that much better. So that's really awesome. How do you see the match ending, man?
So this is one of the hardest. This is a really hard match to pick because both guys need the win, actually. And this is such a exhibition match, I don't know if we'll see another one of these for a while. Like, I don't know if they'll have another one-on-one match anytime soon. I think Ricochet wins because I think Ricochet is going to move up to the championship division. Like, basically either facing Black or Lars or whoever the champion is coming up soon. But also, the beauty of Velveteen Dream is his character not only is so over, but it's such that, much like with Aleister Black, Velveteen Dream lost the match, but he won the night. You know,
yeah.
Dream is such an interesting character that he doesn't necessarily have to win his matches. He just has to prove his points. So with Dream, with Black, he proved that he was worthy of being acknowledged. With Ricochet, Ricochet's been here 15 years. Ricochet has a bit of a more ticking clock than Dream does, who's only 23 years old. So he probably needs to win more, but Dream will prove to Ricochet that, remember, he said, anything you can do, the Dream can do better. It proved to Ricochet that not only is he as good, but he deserves a spotlight just as much as Ricochet does. And I'm sure there'll be that acknowledgement after the match. Dream's time's going to come. As long as he continues to be compelling, have great matches, and continue to grow, he doesn't need to win overnight, like every match. Let him win the matches he needs to win, but these big matches, he can lose as long as there's a reason. But this time, like, we don't have to give it all away now. Like, Dream is going to be in this game for 20 more years, probably. 23 years old. There is time.
Yeah, if he stays healthy, just to get to AJ Styles' age is 17 years. And I would argue AJ Styles looks better now than he ever has.
He's in his prime right now.
Yeah, at 40. So,
sure.
You know,
Kenny Omega's 35. He's in his prime.
Exactly. So, Velveteen to be this progressed in his career and to be this on top of his game at 23
years old. And in-ring stuff can be taught. Like, we get that. You're learning that now. So, you need to have an aptitude for it, but sure, it can be taught, right?
Right.
So, you can get better. But the grasp this man has on character work and the understanding he has of who he is, not only as a person, but as a character, is at 23, he has a better grasp of that than people who've been wrestling 20 years.
True.
You know, it's just the subtleties, the way he walks. If you notice, when he walks, he saunters, but like, you know, when everybody walks, they plod their feet down. He curls his feet on the ground, and the way he licks he moves his finger around his mouth like he's wiping his mouth, but he does it in a way that you don't know. It's just we need to move on because we'll talk this for the rest of the show. Move on. Ricochet wins.
So Ricochet wins. I'm going to say Ricochet as well. Next, we're going to go with the NXT Tag Team Championship, which is Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong, who are the champions, defending against Danny Burch and, is it Oni Lorcan. That shows how much I need to be watching NXT more, dog.
There you go. And Oni Lorcan's been there for like 3 years. That's okay.
Who do you got and why, my man?
I think O'Reilly and Strong win. Lorcan and Burch are very deserving. They're a very deserving challenger. They've worked really hard to get to this point. You know, Danny Burch has gotten fired and came back in all this. And this is Lorcan and Burch's first takeover match. And they've been in NXT forever. But O'Reilly and Strong and the Undisputed Era as a unit is so powerful and so over and so strong. And it revolves so much around those championships. So like they always do. And remember, Adam Cole and Pete Dunne are not wrestling at TakeOver. They're wrestling at the UK in the UK tournament. So they'll be at ringside. And Adam Cole, like he always does, will find a way for O'Reilly and Strong to leave Chicago with those championships.
I dig it. I'm going to say Undisputed Era as well, because you know that I have a love fest for Undisputed Era. I love, absolutely just love anything those guys are doing.
Everybody else does too, brother. They are truly the Kevin Owens of NXT in terms of they are as heelish as it gets, but they are truly loved.
I dig it. I absolutely dig it. When I seen Roderick Strong turn on Pete Dunne to join the Undisputed Era, that was one of the coolest moments in NXT history for me. Now, granted, 90% of the NXT I've watched, it's been, you know, 3 months later, I already know who's winning a match. I go back and I watch it because it's a 4-star, 5-star match, and you're talking about it, or some other friend is talking about it, or, you know, I read it in our Squared Circle Wrestling group or something like that, and I go back and I watch it, and I'm like, yeah, that is a phenomenal match. But I did watch this one, you know, the morning after without having any spoilers or anything, and watching that was just absolutely phenomenal to me.
Well, it was unexpected. Roddy had feuded with them for a good portion of the past year.
Right.
You know, and Roddy and Pete Dunne had earned it in the eyes of the crowd that, hey, they didn't like each other, but they earned their respect. They're friends now. And, yep, nah, screw that. Give me that title.
I dig it. Next, we got the NXT Women's Championship. Shayna Baszler defends against Nikki Cross. Who do you got, my man?
So all the people wondering why Nikki didn't get called up, here you go.
Think Nikki she's gonna run the women's division for a while?
Well, from a face standpoint, absolutely. She loses this match, but she will definitely be the face in terms of on the babyface side of the division. She is. I explained on the show a couple of times how NXT does how they work. Like somebody always gets left behind to help bring the newer guys up, and there are a lot of newer people who just need a little more seasoning and time in front of the camera. Dakota Kai, Bianca Belair, who's going to be a superstar. Candice, once she starts actually truly getting involved wrestling full-time instead of being involved in this story with her husband. Like, all those women, whether you consider them face, heel, whatever you want to, all will be stars. But that you got to build them up to be in it. Lacey Evans, Kairi Sane, like, they're ready. You just got to give them the opportunity to be put in a situation where they really are truly ready. That's what Nikki's there for. But Shayna's having a tremendous reign. Nikki and Shayna don't seem to have great chemistry to me. So this would be more of a brawl than your standard Ember Moon Shayna matches where they were like mat wrestling exhibitions and stuff. But I do think Shayna wins. I do think Shayna wins this match, yes.
I dig it. I'm going to go Shayna as well. I don't think she's done in NXT. I think she's going to go through a couple more women, and then she's going to go up. I am willing to bet she's going to go to the Raw brand and eventually either team up and probably turn on her friend Ronda Rousey.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen in about the next year or two. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next, the final match that we're going to cover on the NXT TakeOver. And that is our boy Aleister Black defending the NXT Heavyweight Championship against Lars Sullivan. Who do you got and why?
So a lot of people are down on this match in particular, and it's because of Lars. I think Lars is he is not the indie darling. He is not the guy who you look at for all the fancy moves and, you know, looking as good as a $2 bill. You know, in the ring, like, he's not that guy. He's a hoss. He is a thinking man's hoss, but he's still a hoss, and he looks weird, and he's awkward, and his body don't move the way his body's supposed to move, but he's dangerous, and he has not been pinned in a one-on-one match. So, and I like the story that they've told, that Lars not only is not intimidated by Aleister, but Aleister tries to hit that black mask, he just catches his foot. Because his hands are as big as Aleister's face.
That was so sick, that spot.
It was and the crowd audibly gasped.
They were like,
they were like, Now, and this is a welcome change of pace for me because, you know, my God, we've had nothing but tremendously fire matches in the NXT Championship division for, like, title matches for years. And I'm not saying this won't be a great match, but it's cool to see something different. Like, every match just can't be, you know, this balls to the wall, you know, ridiculous exhibition of moves. Like, sometimes it's okay to throw in a little, throw in a story of throwing the smaller guy happen to overcome the bigger guy. It's okay. It's a one-off. And this is really Lars's opportunity to show, because I think this is going to show whether Lars is ready to get caught up or not. I truly believe.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's nothing for him to do in NXT.
He's done.
He's done everything there is to do. So, you know, you get your title match, Alistair kicks your head off, and thank you for coming.
Cool.
But I think Alistair does win this match. Alistair has... He's still not the face of NXT because Johnny Gargano's the face of NXT. But he wears that belt well. He is still one of the more important parts of NXT, and it would be a disservice to him and to the fans to not see him walk into TakeOver Brooklyn, the last one, not NXT champ. But Alistair wins. He might not even kick his head off. He might submit him, but Alistair finds a way to win this match.
I dig it. I'm going to second that.
Real quick, it reminds me a lot of when Asuka fought Nia Jax.
Okay, I dig it.
You have a striker against a bigger person whose strikes might not really affect them. They got to find a different way to beat them.
I dig it. I agree with you. Next, we're going to go up to the main, not go up to the main show because NXT, for a lot, I know several people that are only watching NXT right now. They're not even watching the main roster, or not watching it live anyway. Let's start off. Let's knock out the kickoff show. The match on the kickoff show, which is the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championships, which is the Bludgeon Brothers defending their titles against the Club, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. Who do you got and why? Let me ask that a little bit better. How are the Bludgeon Brothers going to win? Because we know they're going to win.
They're going to win in 5 minutes. Yeah.
Think so? Yeah, 5 minutes.
It's not going to be long. Well, because the one thing we've learned about the Bludgeons is don't piss them off.
True.
And
remember, hey, they're pissed right now.
Because last week Carl rolled Luke up, not Eric. Luke. That is the one to mess with. Like, we all know Eric is a bit inept at times. Luke is not the one to mess with. You know, so the only thing I find interesting about this match, man, is, you know, Karl Anderson has remade his body. WWE has kind of talked about it on their Instagram and Twitter and YouTube and stuff.
Dude, he has, man. He has gotten, jacked. Cut. He's gotten cut.
And we all know that Not only does WWE like to split up tag teams, but there is a surplus of tag teams on SmackDown right now. A surplus. I am curious to know. I'm kind of scared that Anderson might turn on Gallows.
Oh man!
And run singles. Now Anderson has wanted a singles run.
Oh, has he? He's expressed that.
Yeah, I believe so. I think he's mentioned it because we those of us who've seen his stuff in New Japan, we know. Like, Anderson is a really good singles competitor.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the case. But that would be the only interesting thing to me about this match to see. Maybe, because the Bludgeon's going to win.
Yeah.
But maybe there's some dissension in the ranks of the Good Brothers. You know?
Right.
They're finally officially face. The crowd's with them. They got their new gear. Everything looks great. And then Carl hits him with the racket kick. That, you know, then you get my attention. Then you're like, oh, where are we going? I don't want to see it happen. But it would be cool to see Carl get some singles love.
Yeah.
They got singles anyway, but yeah.
I would love to see him get a singles run if I knew something was going to come out of it. Like a good mid-card run, a good mid-card, maybe Intercontinental, or they have the U.S. title over there on that show. So a good... You know, or at least be in the running for a U.S. title, you know, feuding with the U.S. I would just hate to see him go single, turn, make the turn, or, you know, turn on his tag team partner, go into a singles run, and be on fucking main event every week. That would suck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What channel is main event even come on TV, or is it just an internet based show?
The main event is just internet based now.
Sweet, sweet. Next up. Gotta minimize some stuff, sorry. Next up is, what match we want to go with next? Let's just start off with Big Cass versus Daniel Bryan. We went favorite matches, and now I'm going to go with my least favorite, or one of my least favorite looking forward to matches on this, even though I'm a huge Daniel Bryan fan. I'm just not sold on this feud. It seems pretty boring to me. The best thing about this feud was a backstage promo from Daniel Bryan. Did you see that? They showed it on SmackDown this past week, where he was like in his home gym or something, and it's on a camera phone. Was it just backstage? Okay.
Yeah.
That's been the absolute best thing about this feud in my eyes. So what do you think about the feud and who's going over?
Feud's been fine.
Feud's been fine?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this could be another conversation we could have, but you know, I feel like, and I don't think, I want you to think this directed towards you. This is a general thing, but when people aren't getting exactly what they want, they think it's bad. That's not always the case. Kaz definitely does not deserve to be in the spot. That's something we've learned. You've seen that. He hasn't stepped up to the plate. He hasn't been great. But Daniel has shown how much of a different character he is. Cass has actually had some interesting promos. Like, there has been a lot of good in this feud, right? The problem is we all want to see Daniel do something bigger. So we're like, okay, we'll just move past this until we can get to that. But they're actually trying to make an angle of it. It's not the greatest angle, but it's not bad. But I do think the angle ends Sunday night. I do think Daniel Bryan wins.
Do you?
I do, because I think Daniel Bryan gets a title shot at SummerSlam.
Really? Yep. This is going to be the first one that we disagree on. I'm going with Big Cass in this one.
I'll be shocked, but yeah, I don't know.
I think he's going to go over with some sort of nefarious means, which is going to set up another match. I would love to see Daniel Bryan get a title shot at SummerSlam. That would be freaking awesome. Next.
Well, for the record, I only think it's getting a title shot because it's getting cashed in on. But for the record.
I got you.
Yeah.
Next, we have Bobby Lashley versus Sami Zayn. Tell me, this feud has not been very good. Do you think so?
No.
I don't think this feud has been very good as well.
But like we've talked about, this feud has only been bad in my eyes. The writing has been terrible, absolutely. But the bad part of this feud, it could have been very salvageable if Lashley wouldn't keep coming out laughing and smiling and talking.
I agree. Yeah, we've talked about that earlier this. Yeah, we talked about that earlier this week on the show, or last week or this week. Yeah, if he would come out, because I compared him to when John Cena was trying to get Undertaker to fight him at WrestleMania, and Kane came out that time, and instead of Cena selling the scariness of Kane, he was like, oh my God, it's Taker's brother. All right, we're going to get an answer. What do you think? Have you talked to your brother? I'm like, shut up. Come on, man. Sell the fact that this is a scary dude. Same way with Bobby Lashley obviously doesn't need to be scared of the fact, selling the fact that he's scared of Sami Zayn, but he needs to sell the fact that he's angry. Like, the dude had three dudes dress up and imitate your sister and talk shit about you. Be angry about that.
And you know what? In that particular promo, when he came out laughing, I was fine with it because I knew he'd flip once he started beating ass. I knew that. But everything since then, like, that should have been it. You know? And you could be a likable badass. All right.
Yeah.
That's been the only bad part about the feud. I think the feud, and you call me crazy, has done tremendous wonders for Sammy, because now we see everything Sammy's done since he's turned heel has been with Kevin or for Kevin. This is the first time we've seen Sammy stand on his own 2 feet as a heel. A first time. And he has established that he is a genuine grade A Montreal Canadian, Montreal Quebec Canadian asshole and douchebag. That is established now. And now we can run a lot further with that than what he was doing when he was helping his best friend.
Yeah, I can see that. And
because of that, Sami Zayn wins his match.
Oh, okay. We're going to disagree on this one, too.
Roll up or something. It's not going to be a clean, no way in hell.
Right.
But he's going to win his match. Because if you want to run it again, and they'll probably run it again on Raw. Like, it's not going to be another pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But at least now you're giving Bobby a reason to be angry. Like, you made fun of my sisters. All right, cool. You know what? That was kind of funny. Boom, boom, boom. All right. Then you talked about you stalked my Instagram and you kept coming at me. Then you said I wasn't really truly in the military. Then you challenged me to a physical contest, which I did just to shut you up, and you attacked me. Then you snuck a win on me? Nah, bro. Like, now I need to kill you. And I'm hoping that's where they're going with this.
I dig it. I'm gonna go with Bobby Lashley in this one, and I'm gonna say the feud's after this. I think they're gonna try to salvage what they can of Lashley and possibly try to move him into something different, I will say. So I think Lashley goes over. I think Sammy takes a pretty good ass whooping in this as well.
Well, win or lose, that's gonna be the case.
Yeah, for sure.
Win or lose, he's gonna get thrown around that ring like he's just starting.
Right, yes. Right. Next, we have Roman Reigns versus Jinder Mahal, and
which is gonna be the main event of the show.
You think so?
I'm joking.
So, this podcast that I listen to called How to Wrestling. I'm a Patreon on Patreon.com of How to Wrestling. Kevin Madden and Joe Graham. It's a couple, a male and a female couple that are dating, and she's just getting into wrestling. He's teaching her about the thing. It's a really great podcast. They've got a pretty good following built up with the show. They actually just both left their jobs, and they're doing the show full time now. Anyway, enough plugging about it. Yeah, good for them. And they are... They're not Roman haters, but they often question the booking that they put Roman in, that Roman's been put in, and
standard Roman thought process.
Yes, yeah, they actually like Roman, and a big deal. Something that really made me open my eyes is this guy. He's the big wrestling fan, and like I said, he's teaching her. And he was one of us many guys. That absolutely hated John Cena during his big run, right? When he went 10 years, only losing 10 clean matches in a freaking decade, and you know, booed no matter, you know, any babyface thing that he did, he was a big booer of John Cena and stuff. And he said when Roman came around and started getting the similar Superman booking, he said that he had to change his thought process because he was like, you know, I have wasted so much of my wrestling fandom not looking forward to seeing John Cena and hating having John Cena in the main event. And instead of just being like, oh, well, you know, John Cena's in the main event, what else do we have? He would just focus on John Cena being in the main event, and it just killed his fandom. And he said, and you know what? He goes, I love John Cena outside of the ring. He's just like, I just did not like the way he was being booked, you know, yada, yada, yada. So he said when he started catching himself feeling the same way about Roman, he's like, I've got to rethink my thought process, because he's like, I'm just tired of hating the big baby face that WWE is putting in front of me, because I know deep down it's not the wrestler. Like, it's just us revolting against what WWE has given us. So and it's a pretty cool thought process, man. I need to find the episode that he talks about that on, because he's I forget what episode it is, because it's not about John Cena or Roman Reigns. He just happens to get on that subject. It's about a 15-minute spot. Anyway, but I was listening to a different episode that came out after that one not long ago. It came out in June, and it was actually on Vince Russo, and they were just, the whole show was about Vince Russo. But they actually talked about Roman Reigns, and they said that since WrestleMania, Roman's face just straight looks like he is not enjoying wrestling right now. Do you? So my question is, before we talk about the match, do you think that there is some truth to that? Do you think that all this bullshit, whether it be deserved or not deserved, that Roman's getting, you know, no matter what he does, he's not there. He's not getting any type of positive reaction. Do you think that the look on his face and the disdain that he looks like he's having for the wrestling business, is that all kayfabe, or do you think there is some reality in this?
No, Roman's having the time of his life.
Okay.
He couldn't be a happier human being. He's getting paid handsomely. He's wrestling great matches every time he wrestles. He's with his friends. He's providing for his family, which is something that... Sidebar. Haku or Ming, depending on where you know him from, had an interview not too long ago. And they asked him about, you're one of the biggest badasses we've ever seen, and we all hear all the stories about you beating up people and this and that, you know, and Bar's like, what made you do that? And he was explaining that, look, you have to understand, I'm from a third world country, right? I'm from a third world country where family is all we have. So I was always just trying to work to provide, to send money home for my family. So when those guys would mess with me, I didn't want to fight them, but you mess with me, I have to protect what I do for my family. So yeah, you're going to get hurt because you decided to mess with me because I have a family at home. That's a Polynesian Samoan thought process. So all Roman Reigns cares about is taking care of his kid. That's all he cares about, ultimately. You know, and do you look at the Forbes list of how much money he's making? He's doing a damn good job of it. So no, I don't think he's upset at all. But Roman's always had that sourpuss face. He's always looked like that. When he was with the Shield, when he went solo at first, after all the screw jobs he's gotten from Sheamus or from Triple H or from Seth or from whoever. Roman always looked like that. He don't look no different than he's looked before.
Okay.
But no, I think he's having an absolute blast. And I realize that there's a bad perception of him. Some of it, even from some people from the real life Joe Hanoi, not just Roman Reigns. But Roman's always been a team player. Roman's happy. I think this is my assumption, that guys like Seth are getting some love, real love, and Braun is getting some real love, and AJ is, and Shinsuke are killing it, and Miz is remaking himself, and Bryan is back. He's a team player. Like, he's friends with these guys. Look at the pictures. They love each other. The one thing that always pisses wrestling fans off is, in general, is when wrestlers say the opposite of what they want them to say. And the reason I say that is every single wrestler who has worked for WWE, is working for WWE, or knows people at WWE, has all said Roman is the greatest guy they know. This is no hyperbole. Everybody listening, feel free to read all the interviews. They say he's just an amazing dude. They love him. They're not just saying that because they're told to say it. Like, Roman's a good dude. So yeah. So I don't think that's true. No.
Okay. Who do you think's going over?
Jinder Mahal. So after all that, Jinder Mahal's winning. Yes.
The only way that I see Jinder Mahal coming in, and I don't picture Jinder Mahal going over anyway, but I do think that who's the other Singh brother? Not Sunil. The one that's out right now?
Samir?
Yes. So my prediction is that Samir shows back up out of nowhere, because there has been some pictures of him in the gym and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he's not healthy yet. Not healthy to take bumps.
Well, I think he comes back. They try to screw over Roman in some way. Roman hands out about 15 Superman punches, about 12 spears, and somehow goes over to a chorus of boos per usual. Next...
Okay.
Let's go with the WWE Intercontinental Championship with Seth Rollins defending against Elias. Dude, I got a question.
Yes.
Is Elias a good in-ring worker, in your opinion?
He's much better than we give him credit for, yes.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Because the last time I watched him work, I thought he was, it was just a typical 7-minute SmackDown match or Raw match, excuse me. But I remember... not too long ago, I read an article, and he was mentioned in there, and it was just like, you know, when we have poor workers coming up, like Elias, that's got good gimmicks, but they're shitty in-ring workers. And I was thinking, I was like, I don't remember him being, like, just this real shitty worker. So,
he's a good worker. It's just he doesn't get the opportunity to show it a lot of the time.
Right on. Okay, yeah, that's what I was wanting to know. So who do you got in this Intercontinental match, man? Is Rollins going over, or are they going to give Elias a run with it?
They have convinced me. And they by they, I mean the fans. The chatter on Twitter, the podcast and the columns, they have convinced me. I have finally come across the fact that I believe that Rollins is going to be the guy to get the next title shot at Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. They have convinced me.
I dig it.
So, because of that, Elias got to win the title. So I think Elias wins the title here. Plus, please give Elias something to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
This man has been aimless since even before WrestleMania. Give this dude something to do.
Yeah.
And if he's champion, he'll have something to
do. Yeah, I dig that. Sorry, I didn't mean to keep interrupting you. All I was trying to say was, yep, for sure. I totally agree. I think Elias should get a run at the mid-card title. Totally agree. But I do think Rollins is going to go over in this match. What did you say you think Elias wins right here?
I think Elias wins, yes, sir.
Oh, sweet. That'd be not. I'm picking Rollins, but I would love to get this one wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. And I mean, both of Rollins has been a great IC champ. Elias could do interesting things for the title. You know, we might finally see that Elias Bobby Lashley feud.
Yeah.
They teased.
Yeah.
After WrestleMania, you know, there's a lot of things you could do. I just want Elias to have a purpose to be on the show besides singing a song.
I dig it. I dig it 100%. I got a real quick question about Seth Rollins. Dude,
yes,
he's on another level right now. Where do you think this has come from? Do you think he's been like this for a while now and they're just kind of, they've loosened the reins on him a little bit? Or do you think that maybe he has just now come into his own and he's learning... He's getting better at the WWE system than he ever has, or what do you think the deal is? But he seems like he's putting on better matches than he has in his entire career. Or is it just me?
No, it definitely looks like he's putting on better matches than he has in his career, but he's always had great matches. What I think it is one of two things. One, I think he's fully healthy again.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
The knee injury he got wasn't just your standard ACL tear. He tore everything in his knee.
Wow.
You know, so he came back still wrestling great matches, but he had to kind of find himself again, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that coincides with him getting his finisher back, the curb stomp or the blackout or whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
But the second thing and the most important thing is this. He's earned it again in the eyes of the crowd.
I dig that.
He had to go through, and fans were red hot for him when he came back, but they weren't going to stay red hot for him when he came back because... he had learned it. You know, everybody gets the nostalgia pop when you come back from injury. Everybody. Everybody gets a cheer at first. And then they fall back into old habits. When Seth got back with Dean, he earned it back in the eyes of the crowd because the crowd was finally like, we can forgive you now. You know, now...
Yeah, absolutely.
You have truly earned your right to be cheered. And the Shield got back together, which is, you know, Roman hate or not, Shield loves those three together. I mean, the crowd loves those three together. And, you know, Seth was stuck in that tag team rut for a while, right? Him and Dean had a million tag team matches together, and then Dean got hurt, and him and Jordan had a million matches, and Jordan got hurt. So finally, Seth was able to get on his own. So, you know, the year or two, or however long it was, of he's injured, he's re-injured, he finally turned face again, he earned his face turn. He reunited with his brothers. He righted all the wrongs. And he got past the tag stuff. And now it's just he can be him again. So it was just a process, I think, to get back to being who he was.
I dig it. That's a great answer, dude. That answered exactly what I was thinking. Or exactly what I was wondering. Next, let's go with the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, man. I'm actually excited about this. I'm really excited about this.
Me too, man. Great. It's outside Atlanta. It's a great group of women in it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, I agree. I think Lana's the one standout that's, you know what I mean? But I think in 3 years, I think she will be, I think she's just 3 years behind. And I don't think that's anything against her. She just hasn't been doing it. She's, the whole time she's been in WWE, for the most part, she's been a valet slash manager. She hasn't, you know what I mean? She's only been training behind the scenes for, what, not even 2 years now, right?
Right, and she hadn't even been doing house shows. Like, she didn't work house shows for a good portion of her career in terms of wrestling-wise.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. I dig it. But in the match, we've got Ember Moon, Charlotte, Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, Natalya, Lana, Naomi, and Sasha Banks. Who do you think's winning, man?
There are only, in my opinion, two people who feasibly can win this thing, and that's Becky Lynch and Natty. I think Natty's winning because they have been building up to Natty and Ronda Rousey something, because Natty's too friendly, and she's bigging Ronda up too much. My friend Ronda Rousey and all this stuff, right? So I see Natty winning, although Becky winning and Becky and Charlotte splitting because of that would be interesting too, but I just think the possibility of having Natty versus Ronda, you know, and their friendship and giving Ronda an actual antagonist to play off of is just too enticing, especially somebody who can truly walk Ronda through a good match, because we know Natty is essentially a coach and wrestler at the same time. Yeah, I got Natalya winning.
I dig it, man. I think they're going to go with, man, see, it's so hard because I can't picture what it would be like for a face to hold, the Money in the Bank contract. So I'm having a hard time picking who it's going to be, but I think ultimately it's going to be Alexa Bliss. That's who I'm going to pick to win.
Oh God! I'm not Alexa hater. I'm not. I think Alexa is tremendous. I enjoyed the majority of her title reigns and all this, but literally since the moment she's been called up, she's practically been in the title picture.
Yeah.
Give her a breath of fresh air without having a title shot or a title run, or just give her just a let her and Ember feud for like a month or two. Like, please, something different. So God, that would just, well, but you know what though? If the point of the game is to get heat, you just got heat because you just pissed me off. So you just got the desired reaction.
Next, we got the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, and in this match, we've got Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, The Miz, Rusev, Bobby Roode, Kevin Owens, one of the New Day members, and Samoa Joe. Who do you got going over?
Mike the Miz Mizanin.
Oh, yes, I agree. We got one. We got one that we agree on. We haven't agreed on one since.
The Bludgeon Brothers.
Yep, the Bludgeon Brothers was the last one we agreed on, and I think this is a great pick by both of us. Go ahead, tell me why.
It just behooves the Miz and his character. It is. Essentially, Money in the Bank or the Elimination Chamber or Royal Rumble is supposed to be a hot shot to a main event spot, right? It's supposed to be the thing that gives a person an opportunity who wasn't already in the main event or already wasn't getting title shots to have one. That's the purpose of those matches. And you have to go through a lot of hell to sneak past that spot instead of doing it organically. That's why Money in the Bank is so brutal, Elimination Chamber is so dangerous, and Royal Rumble is so arduous. That's why. Miz is tremendous, but Miz needed that prop to get back to that title level. And I already told you, I think Daniel's getting the title shot against the person who will win the WWE Championship, who I'll mention later on. I already told you I believe that. But I think Miz is going to cash in, and finally, after, God, what was it, 2011? However long it's been since he last won a title?
Yeah.
Finally get another championship reign. And my God, I know I've said it a million times that there's nothing earned in wrestling by the spot on the card, but if you could earn something, Mike the Miz Mizanin has earned this damn title reign.
Yeah.
If earned is possible, he has done that.
I agree. I think, you know, we differ a little bit on that viewpoint of, sure. You know, nothing's earned besides a paycheck. And I totally respect your viewpoint on that. But, you know, obviously, like I said, we've talked about it. And I think, you know, like you said, if earned is a possibility, he's earned it. I think he's 100% earned it. In many ways, he's been the face of the company. The dude, knock on wood, the dude's gone, almost a decade and a half, or a decade and a half, without a serious injury. I mean, the dude, you know, he's safe in the ring. He doesn't hurt anybody. He doesn't get himself hurt. The dude, obviously, he's probably taken acting classes for his Marine franchise, but that has also helped him in this magnificent heel run that he's had. He comes out dressed to the nines, looking like a modern day Four Horsemen. You know, like Ric Flair used to say, wearing, you know, $100 pleated khakis, and he can barely hold these gaiters down. Like, this dude is phenomenal.
Does all the press.
Yeah, he does all the press. I mean, it says something that the guy that
an extra show.
Yeah, that does four matches a week and is the first one into the town every day to do local TV press before he gets ready for the 10 a.m. call time. Just absolutely phenomenal. But then you also
talk, he does Total Divas. He does Total Divas.
Yeah.
He got his own show now, Miz and Mrs.
Yes.
He hosts the MTV The Challenge. Like, he does, and all of this is to big up WWE. Like, he does movies. Yes.
And he loves every minute of it, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. You gotta love a guy that's been in the business this long, does this much stuff, and not only has he not gotten burnt out and not started having bad feelings, ill will towards the business, but he probably loves it more now than he ever has.
Absolutely. I got a daughter at home now. Oh.
Yes,
he
man.
He can provide extra. And them championship checks? Ooh, Miz is going to be in the top 10 next year in terms of most highest paid wrestlers, I'm telling you.
That's awesome. So we both got the Miz. Absolutely. I would absolutely love to see the Miz win. I think even as a heel, he's going to see a huge pop when he pulls that briefcase / contract off of that D-ring.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Next, we got the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. We got the champion Carmella, FABOUS.
Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom.
Okay, I dig it. That's a 1-2 punch for me and you. Bop, bop.
But you know I love the Carmella song. I sing that shit when we're not even recording.
Oh, yeah. I dig it. We got the champion Carmella defending against the Empress of Tomorrow, Asuka. Who do you think's going over and why, my friend?
Can we talk about how dope a nickname that is, the Empress of Tomorrow? That's really dope.
Isn't that sick, bro?
Yes, I've known it, but it just hit me when you said it. I was like, damn, that's nice.
Yeah, I dig it.
Asuka's winning. Asuka has to win because Asuka's going to kill her.
Okay.
I don't see any feasible way you can get away with beating Asuka by Carmella in any stretch of the imagination right now. I just don't see it. Carmella has had a decent little run. It hasn't been the greatest, but it's been good, and it truly has elevated her as a character. But I truly think that the allure of Asuka Charlotte 2 is too enticing to pass up at SummerSlam.
I dig it. I think Asuka is going to go over as well. I don't know how you have Carmella go over and still keep the kind of fear that people have towards Asuka, because you've had her lose. Even though she wasn't pinned, you had her lose on SmackDown, and you had her tap out clean to Charlotte. And I'm not saying that I disagree with either one of those booking decisions, she had to lose a SmackDown match at some point. Otherwise, the booking, you know what I mean? It gets hard to book her. So I thought it was a good way to have her lose her first SmackDown match by doing it in a tag team match. And she wasn't the one that gets pinned. So she keeps that aura about her without, you know, just this extreme measure she got to go to keep her undefeated on SmackDown. I really don't see a great way to have her lose, not become champion. and still keep the aura around her. So I think Asuka's going over on Carmella. But I don't think this is the last time we see Carmella with the strap, and I think she's been a great champion in her run thus far.
And there's a way to do it. It's just not with Carmella.
I got you.
It has to be somebody that we look at as equal to Asuka.
Gotcha.
And with all due respect to Carmella, who we both agree has been really good as champion, she's not that.
Yeah. Yeah. Ditto. Ditto, my friend. Next, we got the WWE Raw Women's Championship match with the champion Nia Jax going up against Ronda Rousey. Who do you got and why, my friend?
Ronda got to win.
Okay.
The whole purpose of the match was for Ronda.
Okay.
She got the title shot even though she wasn't supposed to have it. The entire build has basically been about Ronda and can Ronda put the armbar in, or is Ronda ready, or can Ronda handle the strength and size of Nia? God bless Nia, but she's basically playing the Miz role in John Cena versus The Rock. Basically, that she's there just for the conduit of giving the title. And to her credit, she's done the best she can. She has tried her best to make do with what she's been given. And she will be elevated just because not only in the ring, when I say in the ring, I don't mean wrestling-wise. I mean, when ESPN shows Ronda Rousey winning the title, they're going to show she fought Nia Jax. Or when the Today Show shows that Ronda Rousey won the title, they're going to show she fought Nia Jax. You know, like, and then you could give that blurb that wrestling loves to do that, oh, by the way, did you know that Nia Jax was The Rock's cousin? You know, and then Nia's maid. But yeah, Ronda got to win. I don't know how. She got to tap her out, but I don't know. The match could either be tremendously great and entertaining or boo-boo bad. No middle.
I dig it.
It's the other.
Yeah, I dig it. I think Ronda Rousey goes over. I think she uses the arm bar. I think she becomes the champion. I don't really know where you go from there. I know there's plenty of ways that you can cash go. You think there'll be an immediate cash in?
I think Natty might cash in that night. I do.
Wow. I just kind of assumed that if you're paying Ronda all that money, you're getting mainstream publicity because she's on the show, and she's about to go in the UFC Hall of Fame, I think you keep the title on her a while. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't be really cool to see a cash in. I just assumed that's what we were doing.
Sure, you're right. But so the question is, when is the Hall of Fame induction?
I want to say it's mid July. I'm not 100% on that. But I want to say it was like the second Sunday or second Saturday. They were having a show, and it was kind of and I could be dead wrong about that. But for some reason, it seems like I read an article about it, or read an article where it was mentioned.
Right. Well, if that's the case, and if it is that soon, then yeah, you keep the title on her, absolutely. Because her walking in there with the title on her shoulder or her waist would be a hell of a yes.
Yeah, free press, right? Because then, you know, she's given her speech, and I'm not saying they will do this, but what if she's given her UFC speech where she's going to be, you know, all over the internet and sitting on either a table right next to her or the podium or something like that is her WWE title. That'd be cool, man. You know what I mean? That'd be pretty cool. Next, or finally, I guess we should say, is the final match of the card, and that is the WWE Championship match, which is a last man standing match, is AJ Styles defending his title against Shinsuke Nakamura. Who do you got and why, my friend?
Important to note that Paige has said there must be a winner.
Ah, yes. Good call, man. Yeah. She straight up said it. Yep.
Yes. So we can put to rest and put to bed the fear of them doing another, you know, another false finish. Shinsuke has to win. And I say has because AJ could very clearly just win this match and move on. But you have altered Shinsuke's character so drastically. You have put Shinsuke in so many situations to be dastardly. You have, and all these are for the better. I'm not saying they're bad. Like, Shinsuke is a much better performer and character now. You have also made Shinsuke so menacing towards AJ and everybody else. Like, just the way, like, the way he beat up Jeff Hardy and taunted Jeff, or Ty Dillinger a couple weeks before, or Bryan right after WrestleMania. Like, Shinsuke will be a tremendous champion in, within this iteration of who he is. I truly believe this is the time to go ahead and get the strap off of Shinsuke. Get off the strap off of AJ. Give Shinsuke his opportunity. And you know what? I'm not the guy who believes in this stuff. But if you are the type that believes that WWE cares so much about New Japan that they make decisions based on what they do, why not put a make a Japanese WWE champion?
Yeah, it's a good point.
If that's what you care about. If that's what you care about, right? If you're really worried about New Japan and their Kyle Pally show next month and Kenny and Okada possibly having the best match ever, why not let them have a barn burner and put the title on the Japanese guy?
I would,
who made his name in that company.
I would love to see it.
Yeah.
What if you... What if you...
stuff outside of that, but I don't believe in that reason, but sure.
What if, you know, this isn't WrestleMania, right? So it's not the biggest show of the year. So if it's a bit, if it doesn't come off right, it's okay. So why not? And I'm not, and when I say the shackles, I'm not implying that these two guys can't be successful in a WWE style match. That's not what I'm saying at all. They have been extremely successful in WWE style matches, but
and they've had classic matches, yeah.
Absolutely. But you know, as we all know, WWE a WWE match is built different. You know, a lot of stuff is predetermined, there's more structure to it than like say New Japan, where more stuff is kind of called on the fly. Like there's a grand scheme of things in New Japan from you know what I mean? WWE is just built a little bit different. So what if what happens if you have the agent for the match kind of let them have a little bit more leeway to what they want to do, and you say, you know what, go out there and see if you can put on a 7.5 star match? How cool would that be? And I'm not saying that they can't do that, you know, with having structure. I'm just saying, like, however you do it, you know, you tell these guys, hey, you got 45 minutes, go out there and make us proud. Like, how cool would that be? That'd be freaking awesome.
And they've done that at times, but I've never liked that style of wrestling.
Yeah.
I don't believe that wrestlers should just go out there and do what they want. I've never liked that.
And this even be the match to do so, since it's a last man standing match. You figure there's going to be some weapons or something kind of used. So this may not even be the time to do that. But I'm talking in general. Yeah,
I'm talking in general. Like Kenny versus Okada and them saying do what you want. I've never liked that. I don't think it's a smart decision. Because for example, New Japan's never let blood be shown on their... they've never let people blade. And they just said, Jericho's just make Kenny blade out of nowhere. It's cool, but that's... you allow yourself open to... anything could happen. Remember when Kota Ibushi got kicked out of, what is it, Sumo Hall? Because they told him not to jump off the top of the thing and he did it anyway? If there was structure, he would never have done that. And he could go wrestle there again. But he's banned from there. And so the matches are... great. I'm not saying they're not. That's just not for me.
That's really cool. Yeah, I understand.
So it would be cool, but they can wrestle just as great a match. They can wrestle just as great a match with some structure in it. When we say structure, we don't mean, okay, you're going to do this spot first and this spot second and this spot third. No, it's just, here, I want this to be a high spot in the match. This is the finish. Get there. The rest of the match, they figure out on their own. It's just they have certain spots they want to put in the match because they know they're going to get a reaction.
Right, so, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it. I see what you're saying.
It's not Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat, where literally from the beginning to the end, everything is choreographed.
Right, right, right.
That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. What was the other famous one that is known to be like that? Oh, Goldberg. He mentioned it in his Hall of Fame speech. No. Halloween Havoc 98?
Goldberg, 97. DDP, yeah.
Halloween Havoc 98, I believe, main event, after the real greatest match of all time. That's Hogan Warrior 2.
Uh-oh.
Goldberg said that he kind of talked shit a little bit jokingly on DDP for handing him a 14-page script. Like, God damn it, Goldberg. That's a great... It's pretty much known that was probably the best match you ever had, so maybe you should have been scripting out more shit. But anyway, I love DDP, as you can tell, dude. That guy has, he's helping Just Incredible. Did you know that now? I'm sure you knew that, but he's
Yes,
helping,
I did, yeah.
You know, I think actually we talked off air, you and I did, about the video that came out of Credible kind of crashing this indie
Yeah.
show up north after he showed up drunk and they're like, hey man, you know, you need to go get help. And he fucking like legit came out of the crowd trying to get the mic and they stopped the show and they were like, bro, like, what do you want, man? Like, you're drunk. We told you not to come out here. You left. You came back, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so he released a video the next day. Credible did, you know, saying, I'm going to get help. My buddy DDP, and I think he said Scott Hall, they both called him last night and said, come to Atlanta. So now Credible's getting help too. So I think that's really cool. But I've got to, all because of that and what he did with Jake and what he did with Scott Hall, I think DDP is going to have a special place in heaven next to Jesus Christ himself. You know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you, man. Like, you ain't ever lied.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the end of the show. So, we are going to have the weekend off, you and I. I hope you have a good Father's Day.
Oh, that's right. It is Father's Day, yeah.
It's come Sunday, my man. It is Faja's Day. So
happy Father's Day to you, my brother.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate it very much. Happy Father's Day to you. I hope you have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day to everyone listening. I want to give a special happy Father's Day to our boy Darren, our friend from across the way. His boy Carlos just recently got married last month. We gave him a shout-out for that, but we haven't talked to Darren in a couple of weeks. So I just wanted to say what's up. He wrote in, I think he wrote in like 2 days ago and we talked, but I meant like on the air. We haven't spoke to him in a while. So,
right.
I want to say hello to him. And also, finally, my mother-in-law, Karen, is listening. Karen, we love you very much. Be sure and tell your husband, my father-in-law, Lawrence, happy Father's Day from us as well.
Happy Father's Day, Mr. Scarpetti.
Yes, absolutely. Ray, anything else before we take off, my man?
I do want to say one thing real quick.
Let's hear it.
There was a big conversation this week about New Japan possibly having women's wrestling or not having women's wrestling and why, and the importance of Joshi wrestling outside of New Japan. Big conversation, people on both sides of the fence. Well, anyway, I will be having a special, I'm almost looking at it like an interview, if you will, but it's kind of like a one of those outside the lines-esque, 60 Minutes-esque conversations with PW Ponderings and former Ring Bells writer and Joshi and women's wrestling expert Sierra Reed. If you don't know who she is or you've never heard of her before, she is one of the most knowledgeable wrestling fans on the planet about all wrestling. But in specific, I don't know if many people know more about Joshi wrestling and women's wrestling in general than she does. And we are going to have this conversation, and I'm going to simulcast it on the world-class ChairShot radio feed and on the Social Suplex Network feed, because I think it's that important of a conversation. You know, a lot of the times we as fans, we argue at each other, with each other, around each other, just for the sake of arguing. For once, I'd like for us to actually have a real conversation about something that is relevant, you know, and important. You know, we're in the world now. I'm a father, speaking of Father's Day, I'm a father of two daughters. A soon-to-be 10-year-old and my 7-year-old just turned 7 yesterday. And, you know, women's wrestling has become what it always should have been, which is as important as male wrestling. So this conversation is really important. So you guys look out for that. We should be recording Sunday, so it'll probably be out before Money in the Bank, maybe Monday, depending on what I got going on that day I'll post it. But I want you guys to give that a listen if you could, because I think I'm going to learn a lot, because I always do when I talk to her. I think we all can learn a lot.
Absolutely, dude. I can say absolutely I am looking forward to that. I'm actually kind of jealous that you're having that conversation with her. I would love to be a part of that. That's freaking awesome. And I'm so proud that you decided to simulcast that so that awesome conversation can be under Minding Your Show banner. So that's really cool, man. Congratulations. Don't forget, guys, if you want more info on that, feel free to hit up Ray on Twitter at It's Ray Cash. You can follow us together on the show at World Class Daily. That's World Class, DAILY. You can follow me at Fox the Podcaster. And don't forget, we're also on Facebook at World Class Radio. I think we're up to like 1,100 likes on Facebook. So, go over there, give us a like. We're starting to catch fire, like Becky Lynch herself. Happy Father's Day. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. And for Mr. Ray Cash himself and me, everyone stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?